Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is an interview with Mrs. Jean Willett for the Griffith University Jubilee History, taped at Upper Mount Gravatt on Thursday, 1st February 1996 with Dr. Northcourt.
Come on, and I'll just leave it there with you.
That's okay.
Yes.
So you said you needed to start with the Cambridge days.
Yes.
I'll take a few notes while I'm going.
Sure. Why I have to go back so far is he started the first business school in Britain at Cambridge University, and this was a real innovation, and he had to get the approval of the whole university before he was permitted to set up this school. And he was given 6 months to do this. And so when he came to Melbourne, he was asked to come to Australia from Cambridge to start the business school, and the first one in Australia.
Right.
So it has been a learning curve from Cambridge through Melbourne, with these MBA students in both cases, into Griffith University for the whole university.
Right.
So he was a man who believed in breadth in education. It wasn't just one single straight tramline. It was had to be comprehensive. And this is why the first year everybody read the same thing. But also the school system he introduced into the education ideas.
How did he contribute towards before the university actually started up? Did he have a lot of contribution, which I understand he did, to setting off the courses and the philosophy? And was there much discussion about that, and with who?
Well, the people at the university will tell you that about them, because of course they had meetings all the time.
Yeah.
And they worked as a team.
Yeah.
And it was the same with the buildings and the ground staff, everybody. We were all in it together, and the wives and the children as well.
Right. And yes, I heard that.
So it really was not one man, it was everybody.
Yes. And everybody says that too.
We were a team, really. We were a family.
Yeah. And did that continue right into the early teaching, or?
Oh yes, it continued right through to, as long as we were there.
Yes. Tell me, what are the things about the early teaching years that you would most like to recall or remember or tell me about?
I wasn't involved with the teaching in any way.
No, I don't mean the teaching specifically, but just about the early years.
It was the teamwork that really, the council, everybody were involved, and we had the dinners, and the council came into them to our house, and our family were there for this when we were selecting people to be the first foundation chairman of the school. Each school, they came to our place for dinner, and we had these dinner parties night after week after week, and sometimes my children were there at home, and so they had dinner with them, and it was quite interesting to hear their point of view as well.
Sure.
As the staff point of view.
Yeah.
And my job at these dinners, other than cooking them, was after the dinner, coffee time, I spoke to the candidates and answered questions that their wives had asked.
Right, yeah.
So that we knew about the people who were coming. And we knew, you know, I was given a secretary for myself to for sending information overseas before they came in, and I asked them what they wanted for putting in their houses, which I got and fixed, rented them for them till they got here, because all of them were coming except the Calvin Roses. They came up from Canada.
Yes.
But the others all came from overseas. So they needed help there, and I enjoyed doing that very much. And so we had the sort of breakfast up and have what they needed for breakfast and for dinner, and Jane Topley made casseroles, and you know, we all made things that put in the house. It was a great fun.
It must have been a very exciting time.
Oh, it was such fun. The whole time we're all so exhausted, we just paddled along,
yeah,
cheering each other on.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a great fun. And you must talk to Robin Gibson.
Right.
He built the first building. He was the architect.
What about the site? How did you all feel about Maple?
Well, the ring road was a bit of a headache because everybody agreed, but still, Johnson.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he's dead.
Yeah.
But Roger, he had this vision, you know, just fabulous working with them. And his wife, of course, was there. She was mucking in with the rest of us. And we're all. Robin Gibson's wife was, you know, just great fun.
And it all sort of came together fairly well.
Oh, yes.
And was your husband, was Professor Willett happy with it? Or is there any areas that he was uncomfortable with, that he wanted to change?
Well, I think on the whole, it really came together very well.
Yes.
Over the 3 years we were given,
yes,
to do this. And of course there were hiccups on the way.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it was an enormous project.
Of course it was. And to do it in such time, too.
Exactly.
And of course, even Ted Bray and the Foundation, they had a little bit longer. But tell me about how he got on. I understand that the relationship with Ted Bray, is a unique,
oh, yes,
chancellor, because, I mean, he had a hands-on involvement, not like a normal chancellor.
No.
So how did they, I believe they had their ups and downs.
Of course they did. I mean, goodness me, they're so different.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, of course, they've had their ups and downs and arguments and all the rest of it. And, but, that was just bound to be a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, there was bound to be bad times when you didn't agree and things.
Yes, yes. But it wouldn't matter in a circumstance like that who was involved, there's sure to be those issues.
Of course it does. They were perfectly human, every one of us, you know.
Yeah,
nothing.
Exactly. Was Professor Willett completely happy with the aims and the philosophies when he came here? Or were there any things that he thought, no, I'm not happy about that, we should be thinking more about this, that, the other?
Well, I think, talking to others, this is only my understanding.
Sure.
There were times that things he did manipulate to get it to suit him, and nearer, he had to go and talk to people and take time with them, and they resolved the differences rather than created them or kept them.
Yeah. There seems to have been an enormous sense of purpose that probably doesn't exist in any other university. Somebody said to me, Griffith couldn't have been created at any other period in history.
Right.
It was just, what do you think that that's a valid?
That's correct.
Yeah. Interesting.
That was the year when, the time when the academics were all, the expansion had stopped in Europe, in Britain and in America.
Okay.
And we got these superb people to come in.
Yeah.
And there were 2,500 applied for these four jobs.
Right.
And even I was reading. Everybody got dealt out so many. Get it? Deciding who.
This was for the 4 years.
Yes.
Right.
I think, mind you, you must check with somebody else that figure, because I'm both of the figure.
Yeah,
John always said
it, was a lot.
It was a lot. John always said I exaggerated the position.
But it does sound as if it was a lot from overseas. That's an interesting perspective, that because of the situation overseas, you did have an enormous pool of talent to draw from.
Tremendous, and to write about it, I mean, because there were so many brilliant people, and young brilliant, which of course John was quite adamant about. No one. Val Presley was the only one older than John on that campus.
Right. I didn't know that, actually.
And I think is just, you know, it had to be young people to cope with this new idea.
Yeah, yeah. Over the years, how much of that original philosophy has been lost or dissipated? Either for whatever reason, we can come back to the reason.
Well, to my knowledge, it didn't change when we were there.
No.
But I have no knowledge from there on.
Right.
Because we left Australia as soon as he had died.
Did you?
Yes, and we went overseas and he had 6 months with a fellow at his college in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And a research scholarship, yeah.
And that, why did he decide to retire?
Well, he always had a principle that one shouldn't stay too long.
Yeah.
And you see, we were there 12 years, 10 years. He was ready to go. But he thought he should go, but still would be another few years. But he always maintains that was long enough for the institution.
Yeah.
It needed another boiler starting up and taking over.
That's fair enough. I know that you were moved away, but you probably have some knowledge of this at the same time. I gather that they persuaded him to stay on for a year and then another year. Was it two years altogether? But after he left, things seem to have gone into a state of somewhat sort of, I don't know what the word would be, but sort of unstable for a while. Is that the word? It seems to be that. Also, I mean, I'm quite happy if you want not to sort of be quoting on this, I can turn off the...
I don't really know much about it. But
now, this is one of the things that appears to come right through about Professor Willett, that he's been an innovator and a builder all along. And he enjoyed that. Was that something that he deliberately wanted to do and enjoyed doing?
Oh yes, that was him.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to have been at all bureaucratic.
No.
It was get out and meet everybody.
Yes. Well, when C.P. Snow, the author, came to give a lecture, and
At Griffith.
And he was staying with us. And he came back from lunch, from his giving his paper, and after he'd had lunch there, and he said, you know, the vice chancellor came and sat on the stairs at the lecture. And I said, well, there couldn't have been a seater, he would have used it. And he said, yes, he could have moved someone. And I said, oh, no, he couldn't.
Yes. That leads me into another question. The attitude he had to have the students and staff and administrators all together should relate in the university.
I mean, everybody had a say.
Everybody was part of the whole thing, yeah.
It's difficult for anyone to imagine just how close we were, all of us, and how we all cared about each other and wanted things to go well. And seeing the children going to school, into the right schools,
That's a thing, of course, that's marvelous about the early days. Is that very word you use, caring. You lose that as soon as you get bigger, don't you?
Yes. I think, I can't think of us never caring at all for Griffiths. We always cared about Griffiths.
That's what I think you did, but yes. I wasn't meaning to imply that you didn't at any time. But as the university grew bigger later. I mean, I think your husband had a view that there should have been a limit on size, and it's gone way past that. Do you remember what he thought was a reasonable size? Was it 6,000 or 8,000?
I think it was only 6,000 he thought of.
Right, yeah.
Of course, it's impossible in today's climate. It's an entirely different world.
Yes. Well, I suppose that's another question. Are you saying there that it would be nearly impossible to do the same thing today?
Well, I don't know. You see, after all, he did Griffiths, and then he went and did Bangkok.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know, but there again, you have different environments in which you're doing it.
Oh, I think today's academic world must be a horrendous place to be.
I think you're probably right. I certainly wouldn't want to be right in the middle of it. I'd prefer to stay on the outside. But was there much problem with funding? I mean, was there much, how did the funding arrangements go? Did you feel as if there was sanctions on what you did due to the funding?
No, I really don't know. That wasn't my world at all.
Right.
Ted, he'll tell you about that.
Yes, I'll speak to him on Tuesday, I think it is.
And you're in for a treat.
Is that right?
He's fabulous.
He mentioned another person to me that you would know well, Molly Butfalson.
Yes.
And I've taken her number. I haven't phoned her yet, but I'll be in touch.
Patience Tom used to get.
I'm seeing her, what day is today? Thursday, next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
She interviewed most of the early founding people, and I've read the transcript of her interview.
Oh, you have, okay.
Very interesting.
Yes.
And
to have her, of course, as a student, and then to have her on council, it's just fabulous.
Yes.
He was so thrilled about that one.
Yes. That's not only because she's as a courtesy, because I've read the transcripts of all she did, but because of that very reason, I've got a student perspective and an outside perspective of the person coming in, and then as the council,
wonderful. We have a good time with her.
She's
so nice.
She sounds a delightful of her son, all right.
Lovely sense of humor, too.
Yes, it's a good perspective. Is there anything else that comes to mind that you remember as being particularly special that that does to you.
Just one big family.
What about, there was another aspect that appears to have been very significant that but certainly doesn't exist now, and maybe it can, I don't know. But there was very little hierarchy.
Oh, yes. No.
Very sort of a democratic structure.
Well, you see, with, to start with, Griffith Women, it was the women's group, and we, I insisted on being called Griffith Women because it was from the tea lady to me.
Yeah.
And the wives and families and everybody. So, and John was exactly the same. I mean, of course I got all my ideas from him anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why, that was how we both felt about it. There was, and his students could go in any time and talk to him. His staff could go in at any time, and Val would, you know, make sure the kids, they all got the say, and he would stop what he was doing and listen to the kids and the staff as they came in.
Yeah.
He was always open to for interview or advice.
Yeah. Did he have to be very strong to implement all his, all the things, the philosophy and the...
Dedicated is the word, I think.
Right, yeah.
Dedicated to the idea, he has of the broad spectrum.
Do you think that dedication to that idea was, the original idea, was it strong when he left? In the university generally, I assume from what you say that it was just as strong with him.
Yes.
But was it as widespread throughout the university?
Oh yes. Well, the farewell function, I mean, the great front of everybody came, it was incredible.
Lovely.
Yeah. And you will talk to Sam Ragusa, I presume, and got Colin Phillips, the dad.
Yes, I have already made an appointment with Sam, and I haven't yet made an appointment with Colin Phillips, but I will do.
Because we used to go to Colin, he was the only one who had a house on campus.
Yeah.
And we used to go down and bottle wine in his garage. And we had... Kelvin Crumpy, he was in charge of the grog. Oh dear. And the kids came as well, and we had barbecues and bottled Griffith Chateau. No, it was Chateau Griffith, yeah. Oh, that's funny. And John, of course, put down the Vice Chancellor Stella. So it was very nice for our way, but the say farewell to Roger Holmes. Did you get Roger Holmes?
I have his name, but I haven't spoken to him yet.
Yeah,
I've had so little time, I've had to read a lot of files.
I'm sure you have.
So that I have at least some idea of what I'm talking about. I've a lot of appointments made now. So I'll have to keep in mind Chateau Griffith, made in Colin Phillips' garage.
Yes.
That's delightful. And Calvin Crump was in charge of
He ordered the barrels, and we...
He was the
cellarman.
Master of the wine. Oh, lovely. I think it must have been John Toppy who mentioned this, but... apparently Ted Bray was very opposed when he talked about Collins being the only one with a house on campus, but the Vice Chancellor having a house on campus because of some scandal involved at GQ or something. Which is a pity, because I don't see. I would have thought personally, I was quite surprised to hear that. And I'll mention it to Ted too, why whatever happens at GQ would have such an impact here. I would have thought it essential that the Vice Chancellor would be very close to, if not on the spot, but you were at over at Kenmore, were you
not? To start with, yes. And mind you, that was at the house for the time, because all the dinner parties were in my house.
Yes, so I understand.
And we needed it. And it was a great, great house for us. We had all the council members for dinner one night, and I taught them Scottish country dancing, you know, dancing through the house.
Yes, yes, yes.
What funny habit. But we did that with the MBA students at Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had the 25th anniversary of these MBAs from Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I went down for back to Melbourne. It was lovely seeing them again. And we missed John.
Yes.
Yeah. So sad.
If you were writing this history, before I said that, what do you think was the thing he'd have been most satisfied with, were he to look back on it? Or as he did look back on it?
Well, I think that the influence he had on education as a whole, really, of the approach to education, to look at it for university, I mean.
Yes.
But you see, he was very keen on the maturity of students.
Yes. Of course, patience solves for part of that.
Yes, you
want one.
So you'll get that from her. Yes.
Why, from your point of view, what was his view on? Why was he so keen on mature students?
He thought it was better for the young, as well as he felt that the education system hadn't really been in people's favour, especially here in Australia, from the Depression, the attitude. And he very much wanted to change that. And by doing through education, by educating the majority of people, changing their attitude.
Yeah. Was the Depression period in England something that affected him particularly?
No.
But he was conscious of it. It was something that
when we came to Australia, we were conscious of the Depression.
Right.
So I don't think they affected, it didn't affect me either.
No.
And in Cambridge, really, Cambridge is so different. You know, the writers as well, they don't live in the real world.
That's
it's either you live in Cambridge or you might as well be dead. And so that affected me, of course. I never had any other. They have them here at university, so we came to Australia.
I must admit, I spent a bit of time at Cambridge, a colleague of mine was finishing off his MPhil there, and I must confess, this was only a couple of years ago.
No.
They still seem to be a little bit that way.
Oh, certainly, we've been back. And they're all saying, oh, you're so lucky you've been here then. In other words, you've got all your bags and go and
look at the rest of the world.
Go and visit. You don't need to stay in Cambridge. Oh, horror, horror.
Oh, yeah.
It was funny.
Well, of course, that's so dreadfully elitist in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
And yet, Griffith was such a contrast to that.
Yes, well, the thing is, that is one reason, I think, why we left. Honestly, we.
Yeah.
Really, it wasn't that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a big decision to come to Australia, I tell you.
Yeah,
my father said, yeah, go on, don't you let anybody hold you back. You can just do go and do what you want to do.
Have you enjoyed Melbourne?
Oh, I loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
And once again, the students used to come to our house for dinner, and I made them do that students themselves had to do the washing up after the dinner.
Yes.
And what we did was John took the spouses into the drawing room for coffee,
yeah,
and I took the students into my kitchen. And I'd say, now this, you're getting, it's learning management. Okay, now here's my kitchen, you've never seen it before. Wash up, get organized. And I'd stand back and watch who did nothing except organize, who did the washing up. And John's job was far harder than mine, keeping these women and men sitting, you know, because they felt they should be helping. And they were missing out in some too, so they were, but never mind.
Reversing role models.
You see how mad you were.
Oh, yeah.
Very different views.
It's amazing at that time, because I've written the history of John Paul College,
yes,
when they started up on their own,
yes,
they started from scratch.
And done wonderfully well.
Indeed. And listen to you, you know, there's so much of the same sort of camaraderie, innovation, spirit, and be damned with the rest of them to a degree.
Yeah.
That was, you know, quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Just the climate, I think, of the same.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that it could be two people that really initiated it.
Yes.
Up in this part of the country.
Yeah, it is quite staggering, really.
Mm-hmm.
As a purely personal view, from your point of view, you're not far from the university. It must be a very unusual sensation to think, look, that's part of my creation.
I don't think of it as my creation at all.
No, it's John. Well, even as a sense of his.
Yes.
It must be unusual in that way.
I think it was just something that just happened, and it was meant to happen, and it did happen.
Yeah. If I said, and this is what I'm going to try and find out in this project, if I said to you, it was quite different now from the vision that the founders had, including your husband, would you feel very disappointed, or would you say, that's the way things go, life goes on?
I think that they evolve, yes.
They do, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I still think the emphasis is very much that it's different.
Yeah. I think that's true. I'm trying to get a handle on that. And talking to the Vice Chancellor yesterday, he was at pains.
Is that the one, first thing you've met him?
No, it's the second, third time I've met him. And I met him a couple of times socially, but only in a group. He wouldn't know me from Adam. I had a fairly comprehensive discussion with him when he wanted this thing done, and they decided he wanted me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday I went to him like I'm coming to you now to talk about the university and the history on a professional sort of a basis, interviewing him,
mm-hmm,
like that. And he went to great pains to point to the continuum of John Willett's vision in some ways that had to expand and change and evolve.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's inevitable, whether it's him or anybody else, it's going to evolve just because times change. But he pointed out to me a number of different things that may have changed somewhat in the structure of the operation, but that fundamentally we're continuing that stage. And I think that's true.
That's true.
It is an alternative. It's not the traditional. They have faculties now instead of schools, but at the same time, they don't have departments with power vested in the head of a department.
No, I agree with that.
And this is part, you think that is a content, that is part of the...
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Because that's one of the things I think I've got to get a handle on for what's happened in the 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've got to write a bit about after we left for the 25 years.
Oh, yes.
I
mean,
that's basic.
It's quite a bit.
And really, I don't envy them their job nowadays.
Yeah.
Because it's so big.
Yeah.
And I mean, all these camps, you know, and you know, the whole emphasis now is hands-on, and there's no way Brian Hazard can do it. I mean, it's impossible.
You've got to delegate so much.
Yeah, and miss out on this sort of warm feeling that we had.
Well, that's very true. It's a point that one doesn't think about, yes, but...
And we knew, I mean, I knew all the children's names even, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Yes, it is impossible. And, of course, a lot of the amalgamation and expansion was necessary because of Dawkins and all of these pressures that came in from funding. The whole environment changed quite
and all universities.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah.
Look at the University of Queensland, for goodness sake. When they started their business school, the university, you know, that group of people making money.
Yeah.
That was all they were given a job to do, wasn't it? I mean, the horror we all felt. Absolutely awful.
Exactly.
What is this learning about?
Yeah. Now, that's once in the community, whether it be the local community, in the academic community, in the political community, was there much opposition? Were you conscious, or were your husband, you know, conscious of opposition? People who didn't want it to succeed, or who had concerns about elements of
it? The thing is, no, there was nothing like that at all. John is a very good PR man, and for instance, he was made an honorary lion for the Lions Club. We went for functions and things. We had the local MPs and then their wives and that's another one that can talk to, is Leon Hilshire.
Oh yeah, he's on the council now.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to him anyway, yeah.
Sorry, who was it?
Yeah, about the PR, and I was asking about if you felt that there was opposition from any section of the community to what you were doing.
No, because he made sure the community were welcome, and they were allowed to belong to the library.
Right. Got
library tickets and everything.
Yeah.
And as well as the open day, I mean, they'd come in with that. And I think opening the library to the general public was a great way, as well as the mature age students be brought in for communities and families and people.
Yeah. There was quite considerable discussion about what sort of prerequisites would be needed for the courses for the ordinary students, and of course the mature age students very often wouldn't have qualified, but they had an interview process. Is that how we worked, if I understand?
I don't know, but I think that's right.
Yeah.
That's not mine to confirm, because
sure.
I wasn't doing that.
Yeah, it's mentioned in, I discussed this with that person to a degree, although his memory was fading a little bit,
yeah.
Some of those things, and his sight was very bad.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That was quite interesting. I don't think there's an awful lot really in the way of questions that I need to ask for this process at the moment, but perhaps I could ask you, is there anything else you'd like to ask? If you were writing the history yourself, what issue would you pick out? I mean, I think from what you said it's very clear, but what issue would you pick out that must be emphasized as being our issues, or persons, or themes, if you wish, that you feel you must put this in the history. This is absolutely essential if you're going to capture the essence of Griffith in that period.
I don't think there's much more to say. It just happened, I think.
it seems to me that I would need to emphasize this sense of family and commitment and innovation.
Well, the thing is, though, students are terribly important to us. And when we had our dinner party, the head of the student union and our boyfriend of the time, who would be students too, I got them to come and do the washing up afterwards. And the boy would pour the wine for the dinner and the girls would help me serve up and things. And then afterwards, John would bring them in and introduce them to the guests.
Uh-huh.
And of course the kids loved it.
Yeah.
And he was always open to the student union people that could go and whoever was present.
Do you remember her name at all?
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I'm talking to her then.
Oh, you hear about things, hear about dinner parties, yeah. With great fun.
Yeah, by sheer chance, was a friend of mine who's in the English department at UQ, and she's a friend of a friend of Shan. She knows Shan just sort of very casually, and suggested I might like to talk to her, so I rang her, and we're ending up having dinner at Rebecca's house down the road. Not far from here, Macrobatic. So I suppose. I'll get that perspective too.
Oh, you'll get that one, yes. She's a great girl. Give her my love.
I will indeed, yes. So, if I were to say that sort of sense of family and commitment and everybody working together does need to be emphasized, do you think, for that time? There's no other points that are questions that you think when I go and say, why the name of heaven did that fellow ask me this or ask me that, that you really?
No, I think you've been a very good interviewer.
Pardon?
Yeah, I think you've been a very good interviewer. I think you've covered things very well.
That's very kind of you. But if there's anything that occurs to you, I'll give you my phone number. Don't hesitate to give me a ring. And if I may, can I give you a ring if there's something I want to?
Of course, I know if you would if you.
That'd be marvelous. I'll give you a card anyway. I've got a card here somewhere. I'll turn that off now.